You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
This edition of It's My Money is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, your partner for global wealth creation. Welcome to It's My Money. It's My Money is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, South Africa's multi-award-winning boutique wealth manager. With me today is Lloyd Uren from the Belleville Brenthurst Wealth office today. And Lloyd, you know, sometimes you look at market screens and they're flashing red and they're flashing green, and you read articles and you watch television and you listen to podcasts, and everything comes a little bit overwhelming, a little bit complicated. So I really liked the theme of today's podcast, and that's the headline, Four Timeless Money Lessons for Today's Investor. In other words, you go back to basics.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Lindsay. It's always a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've spoken, you and I, several times about sort of the fundamentals and basics of investing, and it always comes back to the fundamentals and getting the first things that need to be done correct. So yeah, always coming back to the basics, getting those right so that we can kind of take bigger steps in other facets along.
You introduce your article with a paragraph which is sort of almost nostalgic. You say, back then, homes were affordable, jobs were stable, bank savings actually earned interest. But today, of course, that's all been turned on its head. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are, though. The fundamentals stay the same. And you start with an interesting one, the first one, credit cards. I know that I use my credit card relatively responsibly, but probably not as responsibly as I should. What are the pros and cons of a credit card, please, Lloyd?
Well, I think credit cards are one of those things that are pretty divisive. You're either for them or you're against them, and I've struggled to find a bit of middle ground in people I've spoken to. But ultimately, the obviously it's very easy to overspend it when you kind of just think, oh, I've got all this extra money because they've given me a very nice limit to use, and then all of a sudden you've spent 25,000 and you only had 20,000 coming in, and you do that a few times and now you're kind of sitting in about 10 grand then 20 grand worth of debt and trying to pay that off every month with a very high interest rate. That kind of tends to be the big pitfall, and I think what everyone fears happening, because they hear one or two stories of it's happened to a friend of theirs or a family member, and that's kind of the fears where the misunderstanding comes from, I suppose. And in the theme of the article, one of the good pieces of advice I got from my own parents was using a credit card as a way to show that you're a responsible lender. And yeah, ultimately that's what it is. So if you get given a credit limit of 20,000 Rand, my own philosophy is sort of to cut that in half and use half one month, half the next month. That way you don't exceed the limit, or you have a little bit of leeway if you have any emergencies, but it allows you to keep rolling over to the next month with some credit on hand, as well as allow you to pay off the full amount, which ultimately helps you build a credit score because you are showing your bank or your institution that you're a very responsible lender and you can pay back your debt. So I suppose, yeah, that's the strong benefit that it allows.
Yeah, and you also get all these lovely benefits from forward-thinking companies like Discovery, for example. I mean, you don't realize that every time you swipe your card or do whatever you do with it, it can give you some sort of benefit down the road.
Absolutely. I think Discovery especially have cracked the code in terms of their Discovery Miles program. It covers their insurance side there and their banking side and all things health and wealth. So definitely, I think there's a lot of people who've moved over to Discovery especially and found they're able to pay for flights without spending actual money, or get a lot of appliances for their homes or any or sort of other maybe more fun items that they wouldn't typically want to spend their money on, because they've almost earned that right to get something for themselves.
There was another thing as well, just before we leave credit cards. When I got a card, somebody said to me, if you pay on this date every month, you get a certain amount of interest-free credit. I mean, you're essentially borrowing money from a credit card company and you pay it back, obviously, but that does incur interest payment at certain times if you're over your limit or you pay late or whatever. But there's a certain formula that you get something ridiculous like 56 days interest free credit. That's not in your article, but that's one to look at.
No, absolutely.
Number two in your article is investing isn't gambling. My parents, my late parents, they wouldn't have known what the stock market was, Lloyd. Those were less enlightened times. I mean, you're of a different generation to me, but the fact is that investing was seen as gambling.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the key aspect that it comes back to on what makes it so different and not seen shouldn't be seen as a gamble these days is the level of information. I think back in the sort of 1950s and from there, you didn't have access to a cell phone that could access the internet that could tell you almost anything about any market in the world at any time. Kind of, it had to come through in drips and drabs in the daily newspaper or over the radio. And now it's completely gone off the rails through the stratosphere on the amount of information we can get. And with that, there are a lot of intellectual people who are sifting through this information and finding how it impacts certain market regions and finding where opportunities for growth are. So really the amount of information that is available takes away a lot of the uncertainty, which I suppose gambling can't compete with in a sense, because the statistics haven't changed. The odds are always going to be against you and those odds are always the same. So, yeah, I think the level of information has really shown that investing is a big opportunity, not a gamble.
Yes, especially if you're in for the long term, which is something we and I know you and your colleagues at Ventures Wealth do drum in a lot. You're in for the Absolutely. Long term. Number three is an interesting point, and it really makes me shiver, actually. Start now, not later. How many times have people said to me, Lindsay, if in 1988, when you went to South Africa, you had put away R1,000 a month or whatever the figure was, do you know how much that would be worth now if you'd have put it in an all-share unit trust or something? Don't put it off. Just start whenever you can, I think, is the message here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's probably the hardest part about starting your investment journey is thinking that the seemingly small amount you're putting in is having no impact, is having no benefit. You could rather have that money on hand to spend when things are getting difficult in the present. But, you know, we've seen with a lot of our clients that after 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, the amount of growth and compound growth that has accumulated to them for just being consistent, starting with their R500 debit order, which turned into adding their bonus at the end of the year, which turned into an extra contribution amounts every month, that they really started to notice the gains that they were making. And they've really been so pleased with just seeing where they've gotten to with seemingly not knowing what they were doing. They were just putting an amount away and not thinking about it. Obviously, when you look at it every day, it becomes more of a why isn't it growing or why is it doing badly? But if you take a few steps back and give it the time to do what it can do in the market, you really start to reap the benefits down the line when it really becomes most important.
Exactly. It's also important that even if you're like me and you didn't start, start now because I was just too busy doing other things, apparently, you can pass it on to your children or your grandchildren, etc. Now, final one is a savings account isn't a retirement plan. Again, going back to my parents, their idea of investing was bunging the money in the bank or in those days, even the post office in the UK.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a very different world we live in. I remember speaking to my father earlier in the year, and he was telling me about a first-time home buyer's allowance that he was able to get when he was my age. And I just felt so hard done by, because even just to pay rent is higher than to sort of, well, paying a lease is much more difficult now. And yeah, investing in a home is a lot more difficult of a task to do in this day and age. Compared to back then, but there are opportunities to really get into the market at this point. And yeah, the real growth comes from investing, not from saving. I think we see inflation rolling on every year, and sort of what you could buy with a R100 note a few years ago is a distant memory now. So really, to be able to put your money into a structure that works and is invested into growth opportunities, while also maintaining your current spending sort of account and your emergency fund, just sort of to cover about 6 months to a year of your expenses, you do have to play a bit of a dual game and focus on both, but putting towards the long term in a growth opportunity investment like a retirement annuity, like a discretionary investment or a tax-free savings account, that's where it's really going to matter for your retirement one day.
Exactly. And if you're unsure of any of the things that the products that you've spoken about, Lloyd, of course, just go to your financial advisor, your financial planner. We've both spoken about our parents during this chat. You say their principles still matter, but the world has changed. And you go on to say, just to round off the article, with smart strategies and the right support, you can turn good intentions into real financial progress. And just I'll reiterate before you end our conversation, I'll just say sometimes just get back to basics and cut out all the noise in your life. Do you want to just finish off, please, Lloyd?
Yeah, absolutely. The good financial principles will always put you in a strong footing, no matter how long or short the term you are considering. I think, obviously, when you start in your current moment, in the present, you're looking to work a strong budget. You want to put away some of the money of your income, and you want to keep your costs as low and as controlled as they can be. You want to take the excess of that and put it into investments. And for the long term, you want to be contributing as continuously as you can. If and when you get lump sums from bonuses or windfalls or inheritances, putting that into them as well. But consistency and discipline and working with someone who isn't looking to be in the best interest of your investments and to help you get to retirement and to live a lovely financial life.
Lovely financial life.
That's going to get you where you need to go.
That's a great way to end. Lloyd, thanks very much for your wisdom. Lloyd Uren is from Brenthurst Wealth, speaking to us from the Belleville office. And that was It's My Money. It's My Money was brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, an award-winning boutique wealth management company.